Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're getting into something genuinely complex, but I think absolutely essential. We're looking at the evolution of American grand strategy over a really, really consequential decade, basically from 2015 to 2025. And this isn't just about foreign policy. It's about how the U.S. defines its enemies, its friends, and really its whole role in the world.
Exactly. Our mission here is to do a deep dive into four critical documents. These are the National Security Strategy documents, the NSS. We've got Obama's from 2015, Trump's from 2017 and 2025, and then the Biden NSS from 2022. We're going to compare the core ideas, the priorities, and, you know, the big ideological shifts you see in them.
So for you, the listener, why should you care about these documents? They can feel like these, you know, dry, bureaucratic white papers.
Well, because the NSS is the ultimate legal and strategic umbrella. It's actually mandated by the Goldwater-Nichols Act of 1986. Now, that act is so important because it basically centralized defense planning, and it made the NSS mandatory. So it turned it from, say, an optional wish list into the foundational guiding strategy for all foreign policy and defense planning.
So all the money, all the resources, it all flows from this one document.
Every bit of it. And when you read these four strategies side by side, what you're really seeing is the complete fracture of that post-Cold War consensus. It's a vigorous, often contradictory debate over what America's role should be.
Okay, let's unpack that shift then, because the first and I think most defining move in this whole period is the pivot in how the U.S. defines the main global threat. We move definitively away from the long shadow of the global war on terrorism, or GWOT, to what we now call great power competition, GPC.
Exactly. And this wasn't some slow drift. It was a very deliberate strategic shift. It really starts with Obama in 2015 trying to reduce the focus on counterterrorism. His NSS tried to de-escalate that whole narrative. And crucially, that administration rejected the vague, you know, post-9/11 war on terrorism idea. They clarified it was illogical to wage war on a tactic.
So in 2015, the goal is to kind of shrink the fight, right? Frame the enemy as specific groups like Al-Qaeda and define terrorism as just one of many threats. But wasn't that a huge risk? I mean, did that create a vacuum that the next team thought they had to fill with GPC?
The seeds were definitely there. But the 2017 Trump NSS, that was the definitive replacement. It formalized the pivot. It established great power competition with China and Russia as the defining challenge. That document described China as a revisionist power trying to, and I'm quoting here, shape a world antithetical to U.S. values and interests, and to displace the United States in the Indo-Pacific.
And the really fascinating thing here is the durability of that idea. The Biden administration, you know, despite the massive ideological break with Trump, fully adopted the GPC framework.
That's a critical point. The 2022 Biden NSS institutionalized GPC as a bipartisan strategic reality. It explicitly names the People's Republic of China, the PRC, as the main pacing challenge. And what that proves is that the 2017 document correctly identified a core geopolitical reality. It wasn't an ideological choice for Biden. It was, you know, a geopolitical necessity.
And that necessity changes the whole game, doesn't it? It sort of blurs the lines of what war even means. So what are the practical implications of focusing on GPC?
The main implication is the blurring of threat thresholds. Deterrence isn't just about stopping an invasion anymore. The strategy now recognizes that competition is happening below and above the traditional threshold of conflict. And this is where that term non-kinetic domains becomes so important.
Let's just clarify non-kinetic for a second. We're talking about battles fought in economic, cyber, and informational spaces, right?
Absolutely. It means the war is happening every single day.
Yeah.
It's in supply chains, it's intellectual property theft, it's in our university labs, and through disinformation campaigns, not just on a battlefield. So this forces the U.S. to see the threat in a much more holistic way, where a huge cyber attack can be just as crippling as a missile strike.
Okay, that foundational shift is clear. So now let's look internally. If GPC means competing across all these domains, economic, technological, has that old firewall between domestic policy and national security finally just crumbled?
It has, completely. Now, what's interesting is that some things are consistent. The core functions, the strategic pillars, protecting people, projecting power, those are still there. But where it gets really consequential is this new convergence on domestic economic health as a pillar of national security.
And the 2017 Trump NSS really dragged domestic policy right into the center of the whole thing.
It absolutely did. One of its four main pillars was literally restoring domestic prosperity. The focus was all on fair trade, protecting IP, and economic independence through what they call reciprocity, pushing back on unfair trade. The view was that being taken advantage of economically was a direct national security threat.
And Biden took that same basic idea, but transformed it from a protectionist thing into a mandate for massive government investment, what some people call industrial policy.
Precisely. The 2022 Biden NSS deepened that link with the motto, strength at home, strength abroad.
Yeah.
It argued that our geopolitical strength comes from our domestic economic health, which is essential to outcompete China. So where Trump prioritized trade protectionism, Biden prioritized proactive government investment, things like upgrading infrastructure with generational investment, those were seen as strategic advantages for GPC.
So at the end of the day, grand strategy now requires a whole-of-government approach to economic statecraft. That feels like a permanent change.
It is. It elevates agencies you wouldn't normally think of. The Treasury and Commerce departments are now seen as strategic assets right alongside the Department of Defense. Your economic health, your tech competitiveness, those are now foundational strategic assets.
Okay, that focus on economic might brings us perfectly to maybe the sharpest ideological difference between these strategies. The whole approach to alliances. This is where the global system got a real jolt.
Oh, a massive jolt. You saw a stark contrast between cooperation and, well, transactionalism. The 2015 Obama NSS worked on the idea that cooperation was this huge strategic benefit. Alliances maximized U.S. power through the liberal international order. Alliances were just intrinsically a good thing.
But the America First doctrine challenged that idea at its core, right? It viewed multilateralism as something that often held the U.S. back.
The Trump strategies, both in 2017 and 2025, look at it through a purely transactional lens. The 2025 NSS flat out says the U.S. will no longer prop up the entire world order like Atlas.
Mm-hmm.
They really pushed the idea that allies were free riding on U.S. security guarantees. They demanded reciprocity and burden sharing. Immediately.
And that shift wasn't just talk. It had huge, measurable financial consequences, especially for Europe.
It absolutely did. The sustained U.S. pressure, it actually worked. It set a new global standard for defense spending. Specifically, at the NATO summit in The Hague, they agreed to a new target 5% of GDP for defense and security by 2035. That's way above the old 2% goal. And that change is explicitly linked to the demands made in the 2017 and 2025 documents.
You mentioned a dinner table analogy to me earlier, that Washington used to just quietly pick up the check. This changes that whole dynamic.
It's the difference between being a generous host and a demanding business partner. The Trump strategy is the friend who sits down and says, look, I'm still here, but if you keep forgetting your wallet, we're not going to have as many dinners and the security bill is not negotiable. That demand for cost sharing just fundamentally altered how reliable the U.S. was seen as a partner.
So how did Biden try to, you know, rebuild that trust while still dealing with the reality of GPC?
The 2022 Biden NSS tried to reverse that damage. It led with values, with multilateralism, trying to restore confidence. But, and this is a big but, they kept the expectation of heightened burden sharing. Biden's strategy needed allies to cooperate for collective competition. They called it integrated deterrence.
Okay, that's another key term we need to break down. Integrated deterrence.
Right. It means fusing every element of national power. So your kinetic military stuff missiles, ships with the non-kinetic domains we talked about, cyber economic sanctions, it's all one seamless threat package. And you just can't do that against China or Russia without fully interoperable allies, which means massive investment in shared technology. So the pressure to spend didn't go away. It was just reframed.
Okay, let's move on to geography. The 2022 Biden strategy was very global, focused on Europe and the Indo-Pacific. But the 2025 Trump NSS shows the sharpest break yet, basically recentering the entire map.
This is a major, major ideological shift in geography. The 2025 NSS shifts the strategic center of gravity to the Western Hemisphere. It frames the global mission as starting not with China, but right here in our immediate neighborhood, the Americas.
To really get the significance of that, maybe we should quickly remind people what the original Monroe Doctrine was.
Sure. The original doctrine from two centuries ago was basically a warning to European powers to stay out of the Western Hemisphere. The 2025 NSS announces a Trump corollary to that doctrine, which expands it aggressively.
And how does this Trump corollary change the focus?
The goal is to make the Western Hemisphere a secure, U.S.-led fortress to prevent immediate domestic crises. So that means preventing mass migration, aggressively fighting cartels, which it calls narco-terrorists, and crucially, eliminating hostile foreign incursion or ownership of key assets. That part is aimed squarely at China's growing footprint in Latin America. Global theaters are basically secondary to stability here at home.
Which raises the big question. If the focus is the hemisphere, what happens to Asia, the whole epicenter of GPC? Did the China focus just get dropped?
No, and that's what we call Asia's quiet continuity. The 2025 NSS actually accepts key competitive structures that were built under Biden. For instance, the Akishas Pact with Australia and the UK, the expanded base access in the Philippines, all that defensive architecture, it stays. And deterring a conflict over Taiwan, because of its semiconductors and its location, also remains a priority.
So the infrastructure built to compete with China stays in place, but the management style changes. The attention is diverted.
Precisely. The core strategy is inherited, but the new administration acts like a more demanding landlord. It presses allies like Japan, South Korea, and Australia to spend more, to upgrade facilities faster. The architecture is there, but the price of protection is raised.
Finally, let's look at how the very definition of national security has widened. And this is where you really see the ideological fault lines. We have to talk about climate change.
The distinction on climate change couldn't be starker. Obama's 2015 NSS saw it as a threat multiplier for instability. Trump's 2017 NSS, it just largely de-emphasized or omitted it entirely. Mm-hmm. Then Biden's 2022 strategy was a radical reversal, elevating it to an existential threat, the greatest shared problem we face.
And that wasn't just about environmental policy, was it? It was a strategic move.
Yes, a calculated one. It's a diplomatic move designed to build broad coalitions around shared concerns, climate, pandemics, non-proliferation. This creates a diplomatic counterweight to rivals like China and Russia, who tend to focus just on traditional power politics. Shared global interests become strategic assets.
Okay, let's talk about domestic security, because the definition of threats to the homeland has also widened a lot in these documents.
In 2017, the Trump focus was on external threats to domestic security: the border, migration, crime. But the 2022 Biden NSS did something new and critical. It committed to countering domestic violent extremists, or DVEs. It treated internal political extremism as a core national security threat. So now Washington was defining internal political activity as a national security risk.
And the 2025 Trump NSS pushes that domestic definition even further, adding a completely different ideological layer.
That's right. The 2025 document includes a commitment to the restoration and reinvigoration of American spiritual and cultural health.
And beyond that, that NSS contains some deeply controversial language about our allies, particularly in Europe. It argues Europe is facing civilizational erasure from migration, the low birth rates, and political trends. It then urges Washington to cultivate resistance inside European states to their current political path. And as we always try to do here, we have to be impartial. The source material we have notes that critics called the specific language a far-right pamphlet, which just highlights the contention that's created when national security gets defined in these ideological terms about identity and culture. It shows how much the definition of security has expanded.
It's no longer just about tanks and missiles. It's about cultural health and political ideology.
So after all this, what does it all mean for you, the listener? Across this 8-year journey, we've seen these profound ideological differences, but they're layered on top of a fundamental structural consensus.
The central legacy is very clear. The U.S. has definitively shifted its main organizing principle to great power competition. The Biden synthesis, though, GPC plus multilateralism and domestic investment, was an attempt to restore global trust while adapting to that reality.
Yeah.
The Trump remix GPC acceptance plus a hemispheric priority in transactionalism is less a revolution and more a tightening of focus and an increase in the price of U.S. protection.
And that structural recognition of GPC, that's not going away no matter who's in the White House.
Right. And that leads to this final thought for you to consider. This whole transition has made one conclusion irreversible. U.S. power cannot be successfully projected externally without first addressing its internal structural vulnerabilities. Economic competitiveness, political division, environmental resilience, all of these are now seen as foundational strategic assets. The new strategic challenge we're facing is whether a focus on a smaller map, concentrating on a stable Americas, can successfully sustain the global influence you need for GPC in Asia and Europe. Does a regional fortress ultimately empower global projection, or does it lead to a strategic retreat?